Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here once a week at the beautiful studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. And this is community radio, so we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Welcome to our kitchen table today, and welcome to spring.
May Day, May Day.
Happy May Day, Donna.
I feel we've been rescued finally. May Day, May Day.
Well, besides that, May Day, May Day. Oh, that's good. May Day also is traditionally a celebration of the worker. So think of all you laborers out there. Thank you for all your hard work.
Yeah, lots of things. And also maypoles. And and didn't you make, what do we call it, May Day baskets?
May Day baskets.
We used to make them out of construction paper, different kinds of folding and different colors, and put little handles on them. And my sister and I, we'd probably make 20 or 30 of them and run around and hang them, and you fill them with flowers.
Yes, of course.
And sometimes maybe even a little cookie or something.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then this is so old. I don't know anybody that does this anymore. But, and then you hang them on the neighbor's door, you ring the doorbell, and you run away.
I remember doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought
it was a nice thing. How did we lose that habit?
I know. I thought it was a religious holiday. I thought we had to do that. That's good. No. Anyway, we did.
I think there was nothing religious about it. I think it was just an act of generosity and common kindness.
It's the joy of May Day. Yes, it is. Well, it was a busy weekend last week. Oh, my God. Lots of stuff going on. I was fortunate enough to be part of something called Ames Reads Leopold. A bunch of people got together and celebrated the writing of Aldo Leopold in the Ames Public Library.
Yes, and, our native Iowa son.
Yeah. And it was just the power of words and the power of thought. It was just lovely to hear his words. I'm going to read a poem here.
We need that inspiration these days?
We do.
Oh, boy.
We do.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to read a poem here, not by Aldo Leopold. He didn't do poems. But thinking of spring, thinking of the land, thinking of the ethic of the land, here's a poem about spring. This is about spring tillage and plowing and things like that. This is by the poet Ted Kooser from his book Flying at Night.
Another Midwestern poet.
Yes.
Good man.
This poem is called Tillage Marks. On this flat stone, too heavy for one man alone to pick up and carry to the edge of his field, are the faint white marks of a plow, one plow or many, the sharp blade crisscrossing its face like a lesson scratched there in chalk, the same lesson taught over and over to one man alone in his field for 50 or 60 years, or to 50 such men, each alone, each plow striking this stone in this field, which he thought to be his. That was a poem called Tillage Marks by Ted Kooser.
Yes, it is tillage season out there.
Putting things in the ground. Today, today we're going to consider the magic of doing just that, the magic of seeds. I've been spending time in the greenhouse, but first, Donna has a few news items from the Donalana Kitchen News Department. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick. What'd you have for us, Donna?
Well, we had a couple of good things that happened, politically speaking and environmentally speaking, within the agricultural sphere. There has been a decision from the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Fourth Circuit, which I think is North Carolina or somewhere over there, in the second largest hog producing state in the country after Iowa.
Yeah.
And they decided, it took a jury 2 days to reach its decision, that about 500 residents, sued Murphy Brown, which is the subsidiary of Smithfield, which is now owned by a large Chinese company. And they were suing them because their confinement operations have large amounts of manure lagoons, open, uncovered. And, of course, it creates a stench, a terrible stench when the wind is blowing in the wrong way. And so some of the local residents were suing because the quality of their life and the value of their real estate was sorely diminished by these practices. So they weren't suing to make the farmers go away who are doing this. They were suing the company, the large corporation, for the nature of its practices and that they need to devise another way of dealing with this, probably a way that will cost the company more money to do because they were pursuing the least expensive method, which was just like running the manure into a big pond and letting it sit there. So, of course, Smithfield says they're going to appeal it. But this was, I think, notable because it's the first time there have been these suits going on here, there, and otherwhere all over the country where we have large animal confinements. But this is the first time that the court actually decided in favor of the residents whose quality of life was being diminished by this practice.
Well, there we go. It's a start.
It's for the common people. Yeah.
It's a start.
All right.
It's a start.
Was the first good thing that came out this week. And then the other thing that happened was, where'd it go, Lana? I forgot what it was.
It was something in Arkansas. I don't know what happened
in
Arkansas.
Arkansas has a complete dicamba ban. Okay, now this is very relevant to Iowa.
Tell us what dicamba.
Okay. So the genetically modified corn and soybeans, or corn at least, or anyway, there's a new, I think they're called stacked, because we were getting major weed resistance with the original genetically modified corn that we've been planting. So the major seed companies invented a new one, which...
A new pesticide.
Which is tolerant to another pesticide called dicamba, which is apparently it's a difficult one because it does drift and it kills everything that it drifts on. It's pretty nasty. So, of course, it was used last year, and sometimes it was used and applied inappropriately. And there have been a lot of problems reported in multiple states of drift, killing off things that it wasn't supposed to. And this is a big issue here in Iowa. But Arkansas took it on itself to ban the use of this.
Huh.
So then there was a whole nother fracas within the state where some people were given exemption to that. But then now, finally, the Arkansas Supreme Court has decided, no, nobody gets an exemption. This ban will stand. And we will do further research. Now, of course, it can be contested and overturned, possibly. However, right now is planting season. So that means at least in Arkansas, they will get through possibly a planting season without dicamba. And that is kind of it'll give some good research for the rest of the states that need to examine these things.
Well, that's good news,
there
too.
There you go. There you go.
I have a little bit here. And this is good news,
too. Oh, Ilana has a really good one.
In a huge win for pollinators, people and the planet, the EU bans
that's all of
killing.
Europe.
Bee-killing pesticides. The neonics. It's a great big word.
Neonicotinoids.
The bee poisoning. Anyway, they are just plain banning it. And what's amazing is that they decided that they made a mistake. They said authorizing neonics during a quarter of a century was a mistake and led to an environmental disaster. This vote is historic.
Hello, I'll say so.
So we get rid of that stuff. Now
they're going to keep their bees over there on that continent.
Very good, very good. The EU's wisdom highlights what we are not doing in the United States.
Dum dum dum.
The Environmental Protection Agency, those are the folks that are supposed to protect
help
the bees
us with
over
this.
Here.
Yes, right.
Just last week, passed closed the comment period on another bunch of neonic risk assessments, so they're not going to talk about
it
anymore.
Right, they don't want to do the research. Okay. Don't want to look at this.
And so instead of banning these pesticides, the agency is actually considering increasing the use of neonics for a big area of the United States. So compare Europe with what's going on here.
Well, I guess they'll have honey in Europe, and we won't have honey over here. Huh? And then who's going to do the pollinating?
Oh, would they better let some of those nice immigrants
Let's get some more immigrants in, and they can do the pollinating because the bees are going to be dead.
Well, yes, they will. Anyway, okay. News about the bees here. So good job.
Well, we'll be importing our European honey, I guess.
Well, there's trade tariffs, too. So that's a whole other thing. I don't know.
It's so complicated.
I don't know.
But good for the Europeans.
So like I said, we have to take care of this earth. That's all we've got, really. And we have to take care of the bees because we really
Didn't Macron come over and point out last week to our governing body? He spoke in front of Congress and he said, get this. This is the only planet we've got. We better take care of it.
Was this a government official that said that?
It's the president of France.
Oh!
The number one guy came and told Congress, we only got one Earth. Duh!
Well, good.
Hello there. Let's wake up here.
All right. And speaking of waking up, it finally is spring. I'm doing a lot of sticking seeds in the ground, and it's a pleasant sort of thing
to do. The last month of May.
Thank you, Donna.
Oh.
I want to report that lots of good stuff is up in the greenhouse, up and running, and I've had some success where I haven't had success in the past.
Oh, wow.
I kind of, I expanded my horizons and did my research and had a very nice pollination or very nice germination and growing of some very early things that you need to think of back in February. Echinacea, lovage, and parsley. Particularly echinacea and lovage.
Are they hard?
Well, you can put them in the ground, and they take forever, So,
Is echinacea an annual, or is it a...
It's a perennial.
It is a perennial. So once you... The wonderful thing about lovage is once you get it going and you get it in the ground, it's like, my lovage is up, my lovage is happy, and I am grateful. It's the first thing that pops up.
I love that stuff, too, but I've always had trouble getting it growing. It's kind of a hard seed. So, research. Those two plants... Echinacea, lovage, really benefit from a cold treatment, as in they have to believe it's winter. So you plant these things in a flat, and I put them in a big plastic bag, and I set them out on my back porch February and
March. So you let them freeze then?
I said, well, there you go. There's your winter. There it is. And they sat there.
And we had plenty of winter for them, didn't we?
Yeah, and they sat there. It really did help the If you can read about this in seed catalogs and online and everything, it really does work. Stuff just started to pop up, just very pleasantly. So I've got
there you go, reliable nature.
Yeah, that worked very well. Also, parsley. Parsley is also a hard starter. It takes up to 14 days for it to even think of waking up, even after you put it in the ground. So, a good way to get that kind of a boost is to soak the seeds overnight in some warm water. Because parsley seeds have a substance on them that actually inhibits sprouting. I don't know why it does that, but it's protecting the seed. So if you soak that overnight and then do drain that water away. Don't pour it in the bed because it's not a good thing to put it in the bed. Then those seeds have a whole lot better chance of jumping up. And again, parsley, I'm proud of my parsley.
Flat leaf parsley, curly parsley, all the parsleys?
All kinds.
All the parsleys.
I have two different kinds of flat leaf parsley and one kind of curly parsley just because it's so nice to have different stuff available. So there we go. And also, another hint for greenhouse growing or early spring and herb growing. A lot of seeds are really teeny tiny, and it says on the seed packet, you get a big seed packet, and it looks like there's just this dust at the bottom, just teeny tiny seeds, lots of things are tiny. And if it says on the seed packet just sprinkle on the top and press in gently. Do not cover. They really mean it. They really mean it. Some seeds need light to germinate. So I've had luck this year with feverfew. Feverfew is a lovely little herb, a little bush, little white flowers on it. And sorrel. Sorrel's another thing. Bread seed poppy. That's jumping
what?
Up too.
Bread seed poppies.
But bread.
Like the kind you put on the bread. Okay, got it.
Culinary okay. poppy. And also, well, these aren't teeny tiny seeds, but I grow leeks and Welsh onions from seed.
Oh,
and so that also needs to be started way, 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 way back in March. Okay, and it takes forever and takes forever, but they do grow. They do grow quite well. I like growing. There's a few kinds of leeks that I like, and there's a kind of leek that grows late into the fall, and I always plant. There's a number of varieties.
And you start those from seeds.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wowzers.
Okay. It's kind of a fuss. It's fun.
But Lana has this trick, and we talked about it last year. And even I have been able to grow some things from seed doing this. She takes her potting soil mix, and she gets it wet first.
Yes, not soggy wet, but damp. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you put the seed in that rather than pouring the water over the potting soil afterwards, which I had been doing for many years with not good results.
Just think of yourself as a seed. Would you like to end up in a little dusty, dry bed? No. Be in a nice, nice, soft and already moistened bed. It
makes a difference,
See, it does make a difference. We like that sort of thing a lot. Yes. So... also, I mentioned Welsh onions. Welsh onions, and you think of perennial. Welsh onions are perennial, as in they seed themselves like crazy. And
okay, so that's not true perennial. It's a self-seeding.
Right. But it also grows back from the bulbs. I have got Welsh onions growing from last year, first thing up in my garden, and they're about a foot tall now.
Okay.
And they are a bunching onion. They're not a huge onion, but you can... harvest the whole plant and put one small onion back in, and it will just keep on growing.
So are they little round, like overgrown scallion kind of thing?
Yeah, they tend to be a little longer. And if they get big enough, they may get as big as a ping pong ball or almost as big as a tennis ball, but that's unusual. They're smaller.
So is that technically kind of like a spring onion?
Yeah, it's kind of
mild, mm-hmm, lovely. Mm-hmm. You don't overcook them.
And other onions kind of are on a schedule. They kind of come all at once. These onions kind of they're always in the garden for you. You can use the tops as a as a chive, or they're in the ground all the time. And yes, in the fall.
So all growing season, you're going to have these little Welsh onions.
Yeah, yep. And you can pick them up and then take them out and put one or two back in the hole.
And they keep coming.
I have been amazed by these things, and I kind of enjoy them.
That sounds like a good thing for just a little kitchen garden because they keep on going. Yeah.
Yes, and they're a very nice onion top.
Sounds like something even I could grow.
Yeah, very good. And... let's see. Oh, I'm trying a new pepper from Seed Savers Exchange. I liked a lot of different peppers. There's one called an Osoluto, which is a long bell shaped, but it is a medium hot. So we'll see how that goes.
Red.
Red. It will be red. Uh-huh. According to the pictures. I hope these
Osoluto?
Seeds. Osoluto. A-U-S.
A-U-S.
Osoluto.
Okay.
I will report later how those turn out. They look nice in the seed catalog, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah, and tomatoes are going great guns. Yes, they are. I grow every year. I grow two kinds. Well, I grow lots of. But
how many kinds are you growing?
I've got about 30 going. I really like my cherry tomatoes, and these are from. This one is from Seed Savers Exchange, too. If you haven't tried Engelhart from Seed Savers Exchange,
try
that.
What kind of cherry is it?
It is a yellow cherry.
Oh.
And
is it round?
It is round. Uh-huh. And everybody oohs and ahs over sun gold.
A 1 inch or
so? Yeah, teeny. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oohs and ahs over the sun gold tomatoes, which are the super sweet, wonderful hybrid kind you can get. And these are... These are a open pollinated.
Say the variety again.
Engelhardt. Engel.
Engelhardt.
Engelhardt.
Okay.
And those are little cherries that are just pretty darn dandy. Yes, they are. And I also grow a yellow pear called Fargo yellow pear.
Fargo. Hmm.
If you find that, that's good. And because sometimes little yellow pears are just not all that interesting. These
no, they can
nice.
Be a little cardboardy. I mean, they're yeah. cute shape, and it's cute. Always nice to have the color.
Cute is good, but this one this tastes good.
Oh, excellent. I look forward to it.
Yeah, so it's always nice to try new things and then do them over again when you really like them. Oh, let's see. Also, I want to talk about bunny wars happening.
Oh, boy, is it the bunny season supreme?
I'm sure outside bunnies are all over. However, I had the unfortunate experience of my cat, my lovely cat, bringing a bunny into the greenhouse. And I did not realize it was there.
Bunny.
A live bunny. And I saw it in there, and it scooted into the corner.
A baby?
It was teeny tiny.
Oh, I bet it was so cute.
We're talking Peter Rabbit, Mr. McGregor. It went underneath the watering can, all this sort of stuff. It was just so cute. And I couldn't get it right away because it was behind everything. And so after chasing it around for a while, there it was. Well, like the cat will get it. The cat was watching. But evidently the cat lost interest because by the next time I went into the greenhouse, that little bunny, who wasn't a very big bunny, had consumed.
But like 6 inches or
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a really yeah. baby bunny.
Baby had gone down my tray line of flats that I had already potted up. It wiped out a whole flat of parsley. So parsley must be the thing.
Because, smart bunny, yeah, very yeah. nutritious.
And then because I had so many other things labeled, you could just kind of picture this little guy going and reading, I'll try that, and I'll try some of that. So it's been kind of an interesting puzzle looking over what I need to replace.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Lana said he wiped out about $60 worth of plants.
Yeah.
Boy, and that guy had a good
and
time.
And this was one small bunny. So watch out for those bunnies.
And what was the final fate of this bunny?
Bunny, I caught him. Actually, I caught him by hand. I got behind he was in the corner.
He got big enough to catch after
yeah,
all
oh,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was. Oh, yeah. Maybe he was kind of roly-poly by that time. And I threw him outside, but I think my cat finally got him and decided to eat him outside, which was good. Then another one got in. But now I did catch that one in a little trap that I have set up. I have a trap that's for
have a heart, small,
and put it alongside of the wall because the bunnies will, you know, run around.
I don't
the
know
edges.
If I was a bunny and I had all those beautiful plants, why I would even go into the trap.
Well, if you put the cat in there, it'll go into the trap.
You have your ways, don't you?
Oh, boy. So there is never a dull moment on the farm. Yes, there is. Okay. So that was my small, and I guess it was a cute bunny. Yes, it was. And we talked about bees earlier. If you're planting herbs, if you're planting flowers, think of planting things for the bees. One thing I am planting is Monarda, which is called bee balm. Guess what? Bee balm.
It's
it's also called horse mint or Oswego tea or bergamot.
And it's very pretty when it blooms. What color are you having?
I am having the dark pink, which I think is really, it's really pretty. It can be light pink or bluish pink.
I've had some red bee balm, which I really love in my garden.
Uh-huh. It is good stuff. So there's a lot of bee plants. Bees like anything that has lots of little flowers.
What is that ornamental cherry tree that you have yesterday?
So the
fruit trees are just starting the early ones in. And Lana has this, what kind of cherry is that called?
It's a Nanking cherry.
Nanking cherry.
And it's just an ornamental. The cherries are teeny tiny and very, very seedy. But the flowers.
Oh, they're so pink and so pretty. And that tree was loaded with bees yesterday.
The bees.
Hallelujah.
Yes. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. KHOI is a community-supported organization. We come into your ears because of the good efforts of volunteers and community members that want this sort of thing to happen.
Oh, yeah. No advertising, non-profit. Help!
Yeah. Yeah, we do good at that. Okay, and we just finished a fundraiser push. We had a fun fundraiser bit, and we sort of celebrated this last weekend with a get together and a little potluck here and at the radio station. And I want to mention Cynthia McClurg brought the most lovely pickled eggs. So thank you for doing
yes,
that.
Yes, two kinds. Yes. One was pink with beets in it.
Yes,
and what was the other one? Had big slices of some kind of pepper.
Onions, peppers, and I don't mean some other herbs. It had a sort of a greenish sort of look. Yeah. And the beets were of course pink. And what a nice thing.
We like a good pickled egg.
We do. I think everyone did. The Donna Lana Kitchen has been part of this fine radio station since Christmas of 2013.
Oh, my goodness. We're on a run here.
Mm. Yeah. And there's a lot of good shows that are in our archives. If you want to find out more about us and about our archives, you can go to khoifm.org, go to the talk section, pull down talk, and find the Donna Lana Kitchen and find out lots more than you've ever wanted to know about us. And you can listen to old shows there, too. And I was doing that just most recently. And I found this great show from July of 2014, we interviewed and talked to this great local farmer named Gary Guthrie. He is known high and wide around here as the Carrot King. We talked about carrots, of course, because he grows a lot of carrots and other things on his farm over by Nevada, Iowa. But we also talked about pie, and for some reason we got to talking about Jell-O. And
Or gelatin.
We talked about lots of things. So let's just kind of listen to a bit of that show because Donna talks about Jell-O. I have one more thing to say about carrots. My favorite thing when I was young to eat was carrots in orange Jell-O. Oh, that was a good thing.
shredded carrots in orange Jell-O.
And both my cohorts are going, oh, my goodness.
Oh, no.
That was a good thing.
We grew up on Jell-O?
Yes, that was good. Anyway.
So that leads us to the recipe of the week, the dessert recipe, and guess what it is? Jell-O. So the thing is, Jell-O is actually a trademark name. So the French call it jelly, and they don't mean jelly like we mean, but that's what they call their Jell-O. It's called jelly. The French call it gelée, G-E-L-L-E-E. And I think that's been used more because we're having a little Jell-O renaissance in culinary circles here. And so on most white tablecloth restaurants are now calling it gelée. But really, it's Jell-O, but not Jell-O brand. It's unflavored gelatin, which you can buy at the store. I actually have a source online. I get an organic gelatin made from pig's feet. You have to know it's not vegetarian. For vegetarians, people do use carrageenan, which is a seaweed. What's the other seaweed they... I can't remember, but you can make vegetarian Jell-Os. They're a bit trickier to handle. Historically, Jell-Os started out in the savory department, and as you're cooking down meat, like a long, slow roast of pork or beef and chicken, too. Well, if you cook it long enough, it extracts the gelatinous materials from, like, the ends of the bones or the hooves or the... And that is where you actually are getting Jell-O. So the first gelatins came from savory dishes because, actually, sugar was rare and very expensive. So it didn't become... I mean, it's old, old, old. It didn't become a sweet... Like, in the 16th century, it began to be sweetened Jell-Os. And by the time we got to the Victorians, they were molding and sugaring away and making all kinds of elaborate things. And, you know, then in the, I wonder when it first started being Jell-O, maybe the 40s, the 50s, when we started commercializing and it became Jell-O brand. I'm not.
Yeah, maybe it came like, you know, with the atomic bomb, one of those scientific discoveries.
Yes, it would. Well, something because, the 50s and 60s, particularly the 50s, were the era of gelatin, carrot orange gelatin and Jell-O molds and what was that, something called surprise salad or every church supper had it where you mixed up marshmallows, Jell-O, mayonnaise. So, of course, then it went completely out of fashion after that. But now we're having a Jell-O revival. So I would suggest trying flavors. Making your own. Gelatin either comes in powder or sheets. Powder is readily available at any grocery store.
Sheets, as in?
It's called sheets of Jell-O. That's what commercial kitchens use.
Oh, sheets.
But I don't even know where you would buy them outside of commercial places. Just use the powdered stuff. It's easier. And the package will actually say how much gelatin or how many packets you put per amount of liquid. And, you know, it's obviously you bloom the gelatin on something cold and then you heat it up to dissolve the gelatin. And then you can, so you're like, if you're making, okay, if you wanted to make a real carrot, savory carrot gelatin, that would make it a very nice dessert. I would not only grate the carrots, but I would juice the carrots and then I would probably put maybe I would want some of the juice to remain raw. I wouldn't want to heat all of it. So I would probably bloom it on some maybe juice with maybe a little lemon juice in it. And then I would heat part of that. And then I would add after it had dissolved, then I would add some more of the cold fresh carrot juice and sort of in the carrots and then put it in a mold like that. And you would have a savory salad carrot Jell-O. We could have carrots in every course, okay? And then after that, you could have the carrot cake for dessert, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
I'm going to just read quickly this little, this is a suggestive recipe, rhubarb and rosé Jell-O, as, you know, a complete departure from things we've eaten in the 50s. So it's, says for this is from a book, an English book called Jelly with Bompas and Parr, who, these are two young hipsters who made a reputation for doing wild display, parties, events with beautiful structured jellos and colors and unbelievable. So, this one is, for this jelly, which we would say Jell-O recipe, you release the juice from the rhubarb by stewing it. Stewing also works well to release juice from fruits such as plums, cherries, and blueberries. Many will be familiar with stewing rhubarb, but putting the juice to use in a Jell-O makes for a sublime experience, even if it's pink and throbbing. So he's got... oh, dear. Oh, yes, here. I thought it was in kilos. Okay. No, 2 pounds and 4 ounces of rhubarb, 7 ounces of water, 6 ounces of sugar, 1 star anise, juice of half of a lemon, and 4 ounces of rosé, and then he says 5 leaves of gelatin. So we'd have to figure out from the liquid or from the powder how to translate that. But basically, you liquefy the rhubarb by cooking it with the sugar and the water and the star anise, and then you strain it so that you get clear liquid, and then you measure the volume of the rhubarb juice, and that's how you calculate, you know, by the liquid volume is how much Jell-O. The more gelatin you use, the firmer it will be. And if you want it to be really wiggly, you can make it looser. If you want to mold it, you need it kind of in the middle so you can unmold it. Oh, a quick unmolding is, you know, you have to run something full of hot water, really hot water, just enough to put the molded product in up to the lip. You don't want the hot water on it. Hold it just long enough that it starts to wiggle and then whoop, over onto the plate like that. Or another thing, we went through a period of Jell-O shooters, I believe, which were vodka laced usually, and you'd have to be careful because you get really have more alcohol in it than you think. But like this one has rosé in it. I did one time with port wine. So you make the Jell-O a little bit thicker and you just put it in like a flat baking pan. You cut them into cubes and just serve them like 1-inch cubes. So after dinner, you bring out the little shooters, basically. And this rosé rhubarb would probably make a very good one. Even a dessert where you had ice cream or vanilla pudding with cubes of rhubarb rosé jelly decorating it would probably be fun. So that's the summer tip is Jell-O. Homemade, reasonably, old-fashioned. Be creative with the flavors. Don't buy the prepackaged Jell-O.
That sounds lovely. That sounds lovely.
Kids like this stuff.
I really like the sculptural possibilities. Sounds great. That was Donna talking about Jell-O. What a nice invention. Yes, it was. And that was from a show originally recorded back in July of 2014, talking with Gary Guthrie, the Carrot King. I have a question, Donna. In this making shooters and using wine in Jell-O, do you warm up the wine or do you put it in cold or...
It's a heating and cooling process with Jell-O.
That's why I wonder. So if you put in the wine, will it kind of evaporate if you turn on?
Any alcohol, if you boil it, it will take the alcohol out.
Right.
But you kind of don't always want to do that. Like if you're making the vodka shooters,
right?
You put the alcohol in at the end. So as an update to that old show, today I made something and brought it in, and it is a savory Jell-O. I made a little salad ring.
It is a savory Jell-O now.
It is a savory Jell-O. So it's kind of would be a salad course, I guess, right? What do you think?
It would. And thank you. You put carrots in it. Mm-hmm. What else is in it?
Okay. I want to say one thing about... All the gelatins, of course, they have collagen in them. So they're actually quite healthy, very low in calories. So if you're trying to be careful with your calorie counts and you still want something sweet, especially during the summers, these are always good additions. There's no oil in it. This one doesn't even have sugar. So what I did for this one, I had some homemade chicken stock, so that's the base of it. And then in the garden, there is, as we have said, lovage and garlic chives. So I just went out and picked a bunch of those. And so in blooming the Jell-O, right, or the gelatin, blooming means you put it in something cold, a little liquid, and it kind of, you know, it's like a dry powder when you drop it in, but then it blooms or it opens up and it kind of thickens it. So I used about 4 cups of chicken stock. So I took the first cup of chicken stock, which was chilled in the refrigerator, and I put – now, here's the measurements you need to get a good moldable jelly. You need a tablespoon of the gelatin powder per 2 cups. Of liquid, okay? So I put about the first cup in, and I put 2, because I'm using 4 cups, so I put 2 tablespoons of the Jell-O powder, and then I let it sit about 5 minutes. I stirred it up with a whisk and let it sit. That's called blooming.
It's like
a rehydration, basically, right? Mm-hmm. So then once you do that, then the next thing you have to do is you have to then heat the bloomed gelatin so that it becomes ready to gel.
At that point,
then I put in another cup of the chicken stock.
Okay.
So I've got 2 cups of chicken stock and 2 tablespoons of Jell-O, gelatin, unflavored gelatin. And then from the garden, so some of these ingredients I wanted cooked and some I didn't. So I put the lovage in
during the heating process because I wanted the flavor of the lovage to kind of infuse into the to the stock. And then I took the juice of a whole lemon.
Ah, yes.
So, but I didn't put all that in the heated mixture. The heated mixture was just basically some salt, some pepper, some red pepper, the lovage, and the chicken stock. So you just bring it up to a boil. Doesn't have to, you know, doesn't really have to cook much. So you get it hot, and then the gelatin is ready to go back into the chilling process. So at that point, then I poured in 2 more cups of stock and the lemon juice, total 4 cups of liquid. And then I dropped in 1 shredded carrot because Lana had said she liked carrots, and then a lot of garlic chives. And then
you can taste them. They're wonderful.
Yep,
they're
just
wonderful.
Set it in the fridge.
This ring, this translucent ring of stuff is sitting on a nice green plate, and it's a translucent ring with all this stuff kind of floating in it.
It's subtle, really. It doesn't scream at you, but it's good, huh?
The pepper, the salt and pepper, and the little pepper mm-hmm. flakes really help it. And mm-hmm. I can definitely taste the garlic chives and the lovage.
Mm-hmm.
It's a spring flavor, and I do like the crunchy carrots, and they're shredded carrots. I mean, we're not dealing with huge chunks.
Yes, think of it as a lovely luncheon salad.
It is a luncheon salad. Good job done. And there is a little side of stuff to put on top
of it. I made a topping. Often it's served with mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. So I actually took a mayonnaise and some yogurt and a little horseradish.
Oh, that is, because it's got a kick.
Right. You don't want to put too much on because the flavor of the salad mold itself mm-hmm. is pretty subtle, mm-hmm, you know. But the topping gives it just a little more pizzazz. And they used to do things like, if it were thick enough, mayonnaise, you would pipe it on in a little decoration.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, and this is specifically called an aspic? What aspic is different than a jelly?
I think aspic is used for the not sweetened versions.
Okay.
Like a tomato aspic is the classic.
Tell us tomato aspic. I remember having that when I was little, but I just remember it as this kind of pink thing also with mayonnaise on it.
Well, you would do the same sort of process, but you would put tomato juice in it.
Tomato juice?
Mm-hmm. As the base. You could add some chicken stock also. Depends on how tomato-y you want it. I think you could make a tomato aspic sort of like a gazpacho.
That's the sort of flavor. Yes, yes it is. A gazpacho tomato aspic would be...
We'll try it this summer when tomato season comes.
Oh, that sounds good.
Tune in again, folks.
Yeah. Like I said, it does have sculptural possibilities. Very, very good.
And it's good for you.
What more could you want?
Right. Oh, and I did remember the vegetarian gelling ingredient is called agar agar.
Oh, that's right. I always thought that was a funny name. I like that.
Agar agar. A-G-A-R, uh-huh. A-G-A-R.
Must be a plant.
Seaweed.
It's a seaweed.
Okay. And you can get it. It was used a lot in macrobiotic foods, Japanese foods.
Yeah,
and it's similar. It's not quite ever as firm as a gelatin, but it will hold a mold.
There you go. There you go. So that was talk about Jell-O. You're listening to KHOI 89.1. This is Community Radio. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thanks for joining us at our table today. I have another poem here from poet Ted Kooser from his book Flying at Night. This is called How to Foretell a Change in the Weather. Rain always follows the cattle, sniffing the air and huddling in fields with their heads to the lee. You will know that the weather is changing when your sheep leave the pasture too slowly and your dogs lie about and look tired, and when the cat turns her back to the fire, washing her face, and the pigs wallowing in litter. Cocks will be crowing at unusual hours, flapping their wings. Hens will chant when your ducks and your geese are too noisy and pigeons are washing themselves. When the peacocks squall loudly from the top of the trees, when the guinea fowl grates, when the sparrow chips loudly, when toads creep out in numbers, when frogs croak, when bats enter the house, when birds begin to seek shelter, and the robin approaches your house, when the swan flies at the wind, and your bees leave the hive, when ants carry their eggs to and fro, and flies bite, and the earthworm is seen on the surface of things.
It is true. It is true. We had a very early thunderstorm this morning. Just about dawn, it started thundering. And I was, of course, asleep, soundly asleep. And my dog, who can't stand thunder, she is the most nervous Nellie, jumps right into the bed and sits on my head. And I went, oh, well, the storm is coming.
That how to tell the weather.
Yeah,
I think that'd make a good poem, too. There you go. That was Ted Kooser, How to Tell the Weather, from his book, Flying at Night. Well, there's a lot of upcoming good things. Spring is coming. Spring is sprouting. And farmers markets are sprouting all over.
Yay! Finally.
Finally.
Although I don't know what we're going to have at the farmers market this year. The spring is so late.
Well, they're having events. And this event worked out well last year. The Ames Main Street Farmers Market, downtown Ames, Saturday 8 to 12:30, they're going to have food trucks gather down there.
That's right. There was a big crowd for that last year.
So we'll see. So in between everybody else, there they will be. And next week on the Donna Lana Kitchen, tune in and we'll be talking about more spring things. We'll be talking about lambs and sheep. Yes, we will. And there's more stuff coming up, isn't there?
Yes, we are having a... Okay, Donna and Lana are having a tea party. So we're having a KHOI fundraiser on May 12th, I think. Yes, May 12th at 2 p.m. at St. John's by the Campus Episcopal Church. That's 2338 Lincoln Way. And it is a fundraiser. And the speaker will be Kristen Anderson. She's leading a discussion on sexual harassment in the workplace. Now, she is the young lady who was working in the state government. And last year, Mrs. Anderson won a $1.75 million from the state after a jury found that she suffered sexual harassment and was wrongly fired from her position. So this is our very own Iowa kind of Me Too story. So we're having a tea party where she's going to talk about her experience and kind of help clarify these issues for us. So the tea party... We'll have tea from
Littlewood's
Herb Store here on Main Street. And Lana and I are going to make, maybe we'll have some raspberry gelée cubes. We'll have some scones and some cookies and some biscottis and some fudge and some nut brittles. So if you've ever wanted to taste food cooked by Lana and I, this would be our opportunity. I mean, men are welcome, but I expect mostly it would be a ladies' event. So please come and bring a friend that you want to introduce to KHOI. So that is May 12th, St. John's by the Campus Episcopal Church, 2 p.m. at 2338 Lincoln Way in Ames. That's a Saturday, and we hope to see you all there.
Yes. Yes, this is a great opportunity to hear a good speaker, have some dandy food, meet Donna and I, and get to know
Come to the tea party.
Yeah, get to know KHOI. And bring a friend. Bring a friend. It'd be a nice afternoon. I do hope it's quite civilized. Yes.
Oh, we think it will be.
It will be. Yes, it will.
And we will do our bit to make it so.
Good. Oh, and coming up later in the month is somebody, we'll just talk about this just a little bit here. Somebody called Chuck Benbrook.
Yes, Dr. Chuck Benbrook, Charles Benbrook, is coming to Ames. He will be speaking at the library, I believe, at 5 p.m. on the 15th. So that's a few days after the tea party. And Dr. Benbrook, we're going to try and have him on the radio as well. We're working on scheduling that. But he is going to be speaking. He's coming on behalf of Pesticide Action Network. And he's speaking to something that is very relevant in Iowa. He's going to be talking about the health harm risks of glyphosate, which we have a lot of going around here, especially as it pertains to children's health. And I believe there's some fairly new research on, you know, it does things like shortens pregnancies. It does some things that we need to be thinking about as a community, because we are really living in a sea of it. It is the herbicide that is sprayed most heavily on all our corn and soybeans. So it is in the air, it is in the water, it is in the soil around here, and we need to know a little bit more about it.
Good. So stay tuned.
Yes, so that's May 15th at the library in downtown Ames.
Good.
5 o'clock.
Ha. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We've been talking about planting seeds and goings on in the greenhouse, and we had a bit of Jell-O revisited. Yes, we did.
Yes, jelly or jelly.
Jelly, Jell-O. Yes, all of it. We've had music today from a real fine compilation of traditional English country dance music, and the compilation is called Elephant's Stairs, which is the name of a tune, and the group that plays this, they're called Persons of Quality. So what more could you ask for? Okay, support this community radio station. This is KHOI-FM, and you can find out more at khoifm.org. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had fine engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life. Thank you.